Offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, coming to you live from our studios at Prashanti Nilayam, this is Prem, and with me is Brother Arvind. And it's always a festive occasion in Prashanti Nilayam. It's one festival after the other. But in the academic calendar of the university, this is a very, very special occasion. And as students, we've very, very fondly look forward to this moment. And not just for students, even for devotees, it used to be a very different kind of a celebration this part of the year. One of the very, very rare occasions when there would not be any bhajans or Vedam chanting in the mandir, because an entire day Swami would spend in the stadium. It's because it's the occasion of the annual sports and cultural meet. And we are on the eve of that occasion. Of course, what we're going to speak to may not be directly applicable to or related to that event, but nevertheless, every event in Swami's presence was to teach us a deeper meaning. And in that sense, almost anything that is spiritual can be connected to what Swami did in his life or made all of us do. But before introducing that topic and going into that, we'll invite Arvind to join all of us. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and very rightly said that anything that is spiritual can be connected with everything that Swami did, because whatever Swami did or continues to do is 100% spiritual. For instance, we are taking up the theme of intent, the importance of intent in what we do. I mean, the importance of why we do what we do being more important than how we do it, you know. Why we do it is more important than how we do it or what we do actually. If you think of it, I remember, you know, when we were students, one of the most popular cliches, if we can say so, was that whatever we do for sports meet and the cultural meet, we do it so that we can see a smile on Bhagwan's face. And that was something that students said to each other, the teachers quoted, the coaches were told that, you know, it doesn't matter because, you know, finally we want to make Swami happy, to make Swami happy. And that was how the whole sports meet would be planned, and that is how the students would practice and put efforts. And on the final day when we actually saw the sports meet, we ourselves, I'm sure, would have a ranking order in mind, wherein some item or some event was much, much better than some others. Two were almost equal. Some were boring and not so good at all. We would have our judgment criterion. And definitely, each year we would be able to see which campus among all the other campuses seemed to be the best. Sometimes we would feel that what Anandpur did was the best one. Of course, rarely that is, because we always were supportive of our own gender. So, but even within the male campuses, I'm speaking as a representative from the male side. So we would feel sometimes Brindavan did awesome, sometimes Prashanti Nilayam did awesome. So we would have this feeling. Definitely we would have a ranking and we would have an order. But then when it came to the final prize distribution day, we would see that Bhagwan would give trophies and cups to each campus, as if all were equal. But that's what it is. For God, all are equal. Because God doesn't see the final display and result. He sees the effort that has gone in. He is called the Bhava Priya. He sees the intention that has gone behind it. And when the intention across campuses, through all the hearts of all the students, was just the same thing, which is, I want to make Swami happy. I want to see a smile on my Bhagwan's face. Naturally, Bhagwan couldn't find anybody who has done better or anybody who has done lesser. All were equal. And I feel that is a strong explanation in support for our theme, which is God is content with the intent. When the intention is pure, when the intention is good and pure, that's all seems to matter for God. It doesn't matter finally how it expresses itself, because again, as I said already, even in the sports meet, some items were better than the others, but Swami loved all of them equally, though we were not able to do that. So possibly for people, intent alone is not good enough, but as far as Swami is concerned, he is Bhava Priya, and intent is a very, very important thing, and if that is pure and good, Swami is happy.
Talking about this particular top, topic of intention being good, I think it is probably the starting point of any spiritual journey. Because one thing which Swami would often say when he's talking about living in the society, you have to put maximum effort where the control lies in your hands, right? You know, when you're doing a team effort, you're doing something, most of the things are beyond your control. You know, anything, even if you want to, go through a course in the university, or you're thinking of setting up a business, there are so many things which are beyond your control which can go wrong. But if there's something which is absolutely in your control, nobody else can take it away from you, it is the intention part. So if you need to work on something, that is only the intention. And you know, the people who are judging us, judge us, again, that is another thing which is beyond our control. Why they judge us, how they judge us, what is making them come to conclusions, we have absolutely no control over that. But it's only Swami who knows that this alone is in your control and I'm going to judge you only based on this. Because I know that, you know, if you're doing an item, let's say on the final day, you do a show jump 100 times before you do it on 11th January. On the 11th January, when people watch it, if you have failed in that jump, you failed in that jump. But for Swami, who will know that all the 100 times, how many times you have actually done well, and how many times that intention was perfect in every time you went out and did it. And Swami will always judge you for that. And you know, looking back at when we were able to physically see Swami's reaction to certain items or certain talks which are in front of Swami, or for that matter, even certain individuals, I used to always get fascinated by that idea that, you know, when you talk of intention, when you talk of bhavam, it is the unseen. I can never know somebody's intention unless that person really vocally expresses it. Mm. But it rarely happens. But since we know this in our mind that Swami always goes by intention and Swami always goes by the bhavam, internally we would have this idea that if Swami likes something, which means that bhavam was perfect. Mm. Right? And over a period of time, we would come to judge things only not based on what the appearance is, but what must have been the intent. And that itself, I feel, was a great progress in the part of people around Swami, that, you know, you might find a student of Swami who might appear very mischievous, might appear very indisciplined. But if Swami is talking to that boy every day, everyone will think that, no, there must be something good about that boy which is not seen to me.
Mm.
And that itself is a maturity on the part of devotees around. Because so many times you would see that, you know, there would be some of these boys were part of a drama, like the Radha Bhakti drama or any of those big dramas which Swami had spent a lot of time. Sometimes on the last day, the drama would not have been as good as even the students would have wanted it to be. But Swami will be so delighted. At the end of it, everybody will think that, oh, that was a success because Swami was happy. And it's completely forgotten that on that final day, maybe the mics did not work, or maybe we didn't hear the dialogue, or somebody got the wrong cue for a song and started dancing. Everything will be forgotten because at the end of it, Swami looked happy, which means the drama is success. That is the advantage we have when, you know, you can physically see Swami's reaction. But in the absence of that, it becomes more and more of a personal discipline that we have to maintain to ensure that our intention is always perfect.
Absolutely. But before we go into that domain, you know, about how do we judge our intention and how do we imbibe that pure intention when Bhagwan is physically not there for us to get feedback from, I will go to one little story, one beautiful experience in Bhagwan's physical presence, which again shows how the intent overrules everything else. I would like to call the intention as the why part of whatever we do. Whatever we do is the what part of it, what we do and how we do, that is there. So what we do and how we do is there, but the why we do is so, so important that in Swami's eyes, it overrules what and how we do it. So this was narrated by Sairam sir, who is the physics teacher in the Sri Satsai Higher Secondary School. He has been a physics teacher for a long time. Even when I was a student, he was my physics teacher. And he narrated how during the early 90s, in the school one day when he was walking through the hostel, you know, before he got married, he used to stay in the hostel as a hostel teacher and he was a mentor and guide to the 8th and 9th standard students.
Mm-hmm.
As he was walking through the corridors in the hostel, he saw one overripe papaya in the dustbin, in the floor dustbin there. And he just remembered that a couple of days before, in the mandir, papayas had been distributed as prasadam. And The students, being the privileged ones, were all given one whole papaya as prasadam. And it was only the students who were given. There were a few devotees, you know, who would come and offer fruits from their garden to Bhagwan, and Bhagwan would get them distributed depending on the number. So whenever the numbers were lesser, only the students would get it. So every student had got a papaya, and that papaya Sairam sir found in the dustbin. So he launched an inquiry and an investigation, and finally he zeroed in onto the culprit. There was a certain Kali Charan in 8th standard who had thrown this papaya into the dustbin. So he called him to his room and asked him why he did what he did. And he said, "Sir, I got the prasadam in my cupboard. I wanted to eat it. I just forgot about it. And today when I saw it was rot, it is rotten. So I just threw it." And Sairam sir then told him that, "Do you know, the devotees will be ready to give anything to get a piece of that prasadam because it has come from Swami." Then this boy replied very casually that, "That's okay, sir, but now it's rotten. What can you do about it?" And Sairam sir felt that this boy doesn't know the value of what Bhagwan has given, and he must learn what is the value of it. So he said, "Go and get that fruit and come now from the dustbin." And this boy was horrified. He said, "Sir, it's in the dustbin. It's yuck." He said, "Don't tell it's yuck. It's Bhagwan's prasadam. Never should you tell yuck for anything that is Bhagwan's prasadam." In fact, in that statement lies a higher message for life also, because Swami says, "Whatever you get in life is my prasadam." So never say yuck or show disgust at whatever you get in life, because everything is my prasadam. That is the prasada bhava, as they call. That is the feeling with which we receive prasadam. So forget for things in life. The actual prasadam, he was not having that feeling. So Sairam sir told him to get it, and when he got that, you know, closing his nose, he got it. He shut the room door, sat down, cut out the rotten part of it, and he said, "We'll keep this aside. We'll give it to some cow or buffalo to eat. This you and me are going to eat now." This boy was horrified. You know, and it is terrible in terms of everything, hygiene, or, you know, it's picked up from the dustbin, it is overripe. In every sense, it was like a terrible thing. And he said, "Sir, you can't do this to me. This is torture." He said, "No, I'm not doing it to you. Both of us will eat. Both of us will eat it. We'll take half. I'll eat half, you eat half. So that you know that it's not just you." And he did that, and because he was stern, you know, his righteous anger is such that I used to feel that his righteous anger can chill the blood of a tiger, like that it was. So when that righteous anger expressed in his eyes, Kali Charan obeyed, and they both ate the fruit. And then he sent the boy back and said, "Never do. Bhagwan's prasadam is Bhagwan's prasadam. Don't forget that." But after sending the boy, you know, Sairam sir began to think, "Oh my God, now did was I too harsh on the all said and done? In order to drive home a lesson, did I take it a little too far? I just hope that this boy doesn't fall sick." And all that was going on in his head. Now, that evening when they went to Mandir for Darshan, so again there was a prasadam being distributed this time, and it was a laddu. So, as it happened, as it used to happen sometimes, Swami came out and stood and began to supervise the distribution. And as laddus were being distributed, Swami suddenly pointed to one of the boys and asked, "Did you get the laddu?" So the boy was about to nod. Swami said, no, not you. That other fellow." The other fellow got up to tell, and Swami said, no, not you, the other fellow." Like these, some 5-6 wrong boys. And then Sairam sir was seated there. He was sitting behind Swami, and he saw that Swami actually picked this Kali Charan. And picking Kali Charan, Swami asked, "Did you get prasadam?" Now Sairam sir thought, "Oh my God, now I hope that this boy doesn't tell something and Swami will get upset," because he was feeling guilty that he had done something wrong. And this boy nodded, and he showed from his pocket. Swami called, from his pocket he pulled the laddu and showed. Swami called him front, and now Sairam sir's heart was in his mouth. And when he came front, he knelt down before Swami. Swami said, "Show." And he showed the prasadam. Swami said, "You're going to eat it, no?" He said, "Yes, Swami." Swami said, "Never waste even a particle of prasadam," and sent this boy back. And Sairam sir heaved a sigh of relief. You know, what it might be termed coincidental, but what a amazing thing it was, because Sairam sir says that evening this boy came and fell at his feet, and with tears in his eyes he said, "Sir, what you have taught me I'll never forget. Swami not only taught me not to waste prasadam, but Swami also taught me that I should revere my teachers as instruments of Bhagwan, because what they tell He's like, Swami telling me. And this boy had tears in his eyes. And Sairam sir said that after the boy went, I had tears in my eyes. I sent my gratitude to Swami for backing me and standing by me. Of course, needless to say, this boy didn't get sick or anything like that. Nothing untoward happened. But this episode, you know, it shows so clearly that though what you do and how you do it might be a little crude and wrong possibly, if the why you do it is very clear and pure, God is happy and He appreciates.
And this is so true, especially when you speak about teachers, you know, I mean, forget about Swami's school or Swami's university. I think everybody will have this experience of recollecting a teacher who probably at that time when they were student appeared very stern. But now you look back and say that I'm very thankful, you know, they did that. And that's another aspect of it, you know, when you're doing something with good intention, to have the faith that my intention is good and what I'm doing it is purely for the good of the other person. So even if it's going to make me unpopular, you know, in the immediate future, it doesn't matter. It's not about me being, in fact, that's another aspect of teachers and teachers' relationship with Swami. You know, that's something which Swami would often tell the teachers, that I want you to be very, very strict with the boys. And Swami would say this, look, you don't have to try to be popular among the students. It's okay, let them turn to Swami for solace and for comfort, like in the case of Sairam sir. Your role is to be strict and your role is to discipline them. And you don't try to become popular with them and, you know, be very friendly with them. Doesn't have to, you know, if your natural inclination is that way, it's a different thing.
Don't put
but,
an extra
Yeah,
efforts.
But do what is right. Do what is absolutely right. And that's why I think even in our university, you kind of recollect some of those teachers who are very strict. When we were students, at that time, we probably didn't like it. But now we know that some of the disciplines we are having right now in our life is because they were strict then. They said that, no, this is important. This will please Swami. And, you know, with Swami, I think that's the beauty. This might be a little digression from the topic as such. But the thing with Swami, that importance of intention, how when, you know, when you're sitting there and seeing the scene, this interaction you'll never come to know, just like how it happened with Sairam sir and that boy. This is about another teacher who was from a university. And he was telling this incident. I think he narrated it even in one of our interviews, the Fleeting Moments interviews. Dr. Shivakumar, right? B. Shivakumar, the lecturer in the chemistry department. He was saying
I think he's the HOD of the...
I think, I'm not too sure, but one of the senior teachers right now. He was saying that his brother, I think he got a kid or bought a new house or some happy occasion in his life, and he wanted to offer some prasadam to Swami. Right? In those days, they used to give sweets to Swami and Swami would distribute. And as we all know, I think even in our times, it was a practice. The sweet boxes used to be in Swami's interview room. And Swami would come out and call boys to prasadam distribution and boys would go right into the interview room. And Swami would stand at the door. It's a time when you actually get to brush physically past Swami's, you know, Swami standing there. And, you know, Swami will be staring at you, smiling or something like that. So that thing of the prasadam being in Swami's interview room and then being distributed. I mean, you can quite understand why Sairam sir was telling that this is prasadam. You know, even in our idea, we have gradations in prasadam. If something Swami has touched and given, that becomes like
the ultimate
supreme prasadam. If it's come from the canteen or if it's come from, you know, kept in the Purnachandra and it has come, that's got a certain value. If it has come from Swami's room, then it's even more valuable, you know, that sort of a thing. So those are the days when prasadam boxes used to be kept there. So this brother Shivakumar, he went and asked one of the boys who were handling Swami's interview room, saying that my brother wants to give some prasadam like this. Is there any way I can offer this to Swami? So he said, yeah, you can get how many more boxes you're getting. I will keep it inside the interview room and I'll tell Swami that so-and-so has sent it. And either on a Thursday or a Sunday when primary school children used to come, Swami would distribute, right? That used to be the practice. So it so happened that he had got about four boxes from the North Indian canteen and, you know, he got it placed inside the interview room. And the Sunday came. So he was, of course, a tabla player, so he was with the bhajan group. So he was thinking, okay, now Swami will come and start distributing the prasadam, okay? And as expected, Swami came and called a few boys. So in his mind, he was thinking, see, this is prasadam that my family is giving Swami. So surely Swami will call me as one of the boys to distribute, right? As like representative of the family or something. So he was thinking, okay, I've kept five boxes inside and Swami has called four boys or something like that. So he knew that there was one more box left, and Swami is going to come and call him and say that, oh, you're here, it's your brother's prasadam, you know, go and distribute or whatever. And Swami completely ignored him, did not even look at him. And Swami stopped with four boxes. And then sitting there in the bhajan hall, he was saying that he started, you know, introspecting. And he said, oh my God, what silly thought I'm having. No, once you offer to Swami, it is like you've made an offering. How can you still say that?
I still have ownership.
Know, ownership and say, this is my prasadam which is being distributed to this one. He said, how can I have this egoistic thought? And when you give anything to Swami, it's a blessing in itself. You know, you don't have to feel that Swami should be grateful to you for that, right? So he was having all of these thoughts and he was feeling very miserable. He said, Swami, how could I have such intentions, you know, in asking this chance from you? And he was very, very distraught and very upset with himself. And then the bhajan started and Swami comes out and Swami looks at him and Swami tells him, hey, there's one more box inside, go get it.
Wow.
Okay. So what he was expecting that Swami will give him that chance was given. The prasadam was distributed. For anybody else sitting there, they wouldn't have known the interaction which happened. That intention changed and Swami responded to that. Right? Everything else is the same. So that's the amount of importance that Swami gives to intention and recognition that Swami gives to your transformation which happens within, which nobody else can see.
But interestingly, you know, this discussion leads us to a question as to, if I have good intention alone, is that enough? Now, because there's this proverb which says, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And this proverb has multiple meanings. So, it brings up this question, whether good intentions alone, yeah, Swami is happy with good intentions, but are good intentions alone enough? I think, dear listeners, we'll take a quick little break over here, and on the other side of the break, we will get into the juicy discussion on this very theme.
पूछो ना कैसी है मेरी माँ, एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ। अरे पूछो ना कैसी है साईं माँ, एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ। मेरे बदन में जान है तुम्हारा, मिले मुझे किस्मत से ऐसी माँ। मेरे बदन में जान है तुम्हारा, मिले मुझे किस्मत से ऐसी माँ। छोड़ दो हर एक रिश्ता तोड़ दो, तू जो कहे माँ दुनिया क्या है, मैं संसार भी छोड़ दो। तू जो कहे माँ दुनिया क्या है, मैं संसार भी छोड़ दो। गीता और कुरान जैसी माँ, एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ। अरे गीता और कुरान जैसी माँ, एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ। में वृंदावन के फूल है माँ तुम में समा जाए माँ वृंदावन के फूल है माँ तुम में समा जाए माँ दिल में बसने वाली साई माँ एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ मेरे बदन में जान है तुम्हारा मिले मुझे किस्मत से ऐसी माँ अरे पूछो ना कैसी है साई माँ एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ एक सच्ची दोस्त जैसी माँ।
वेलकम बैक डियर लिसनर्स, वी विल कंटिन्यू आवर डिस्कशन बट बिफोर दैट वन स्मॉल इफ आई कैन से या वी वर स्पीकिंग अबाउट बी शिव कुमार सर बीइंग द HOD एंड ही इज हेडिंग द डिपार्टमेंट एट प्रशांत निलयम बट ओवरऑल फॉर द यूनिवर्सिटी इट इज प्रोफेसर सुंदरेशन हु इज the HOD of the chemistry department.
One of the senior most lecturers in our university.
I think he's from the first batch of Swami students, yeah, right?
From the 1970s.
So, continuing with our theme where we said that good intentions alone, good intentions make Swami happy, but good intentions alone, are they enough? That was the question, because as it is commonly said, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Now, interestingly, this statement that the road to hell is paved with good intentions has multiple meanings. So we will take each of these meanings one by one and discuss them. One of the first meanings that come is that of hypocrisy, because a common interpretation of the saying is that wrongdoings or evil actions are often masked by good intentions. So that's why it says the road to hell is paved with good intentions, meaning people do bad, but they mask it by quoting good intentions. So that is one of the meanings of that proverb, and you know, that is something we should definitely avoid, because I don't think, Prem, that even qualifies as good intention the way we are referring to.
And absolutely, that's why when you know we had the opportunity to see Swami's reaction physically, he's the person who will filter out all of this. In fact, when we've had those opportunities to speak with Swami, probably in the veranda or in the Trai sessions, when Swami starts speaking very candidly, there are many occasions when Swami will start speaking about some of these so-called VIPs and people, you know, who are trying to appear something in front of Swami. Swami will start talking about them very, very confidentially with the students, purely for this reason, that, you know, you cannot get away with all of these things in front of Swami. You know, but in front of them, Swami will pretend as though, you know, they're, in fact, Professor Nanjundia, sir, he was narrating one incident of he was speaking to somebody, I think it was a senior student or a lecturer only, and that person spoke something which was not in very good taste, saying that, you know, I can get away with this, and you know, I will convince Swami or something like that, in a very flippant manner. So he said, this is not the kind of reverence with which you should talk about anything that's related to Swami or something like that. But in Swami's presence, these people will not behave like this. The moment Swami comes, they would, you know, get up and bend down and behave very humble and all that. So, I mean, this was in his initial years. So he was thinking, how can you behave like this? You know, on one hand, you're saying that Swami knows everything. When you're in front of a person who's omniscient, how can you be in one way when you're not in his presence and one way when you're in his physical presence? It's such a silly thing to do. And, you know, he was like a little disturbed by it. So very shortly after this interaction with those people, you know, they both of them went to Swami's room, and the moment this person saw Swami, he bent down and he said, Swami, and you know, whatever reverential appearance he tried to put on. And he saw that Swami was also reacting, you know, oh, Bangaru, you have come and all that. And later Swami told him, see, he pretends. I reflect that to him. He said, does he think that I don't know what you know, were going on in his mind. So that was an advantage you had when in, you know, in Swami's presence, even though most of the time it was Maya, sometimes he would reveal that, you know, you cannot get away with such things like this. But in the real life, we sometimes self-delude ourselves or, you know, make fool of ourselves in the manner by thinking that this what I'm doing is good, it has a larger good in mind, but actually it's selfishness which is nothing but masked with what appears like good intention.
You know, even here, it is like if you are masking unconsciously, that is one thing. But I think it's an outright sin if we consciously mask the intention and portray something else, which happens in the world many times, not just in worldly spheres, also in the so-called spiritual spheres also we see this happening, blatant cheating, where the perpetrators of the evil know for sure that they're cheating, but they're masking it so well that gullible people fall victim to that. And just because you're able to get so many gullible people to fall victim to it doesn't justify your cruel intention. It doesn't justify that. That is how, you know, whether it is the case of concentration camps during the World War, you know, they would say that this is for the greater good of the world and we need to wipe out this race or we need to wipe out this kind of people. It was nothing but absolute selfishness and evil intention masking and appearing as something like a greater good, like a good intention. The same is the case with racial abuse, moral policing, all that we see, it's all this only, where you appear to have a good intention, but it is not so and you know it. This is a sin which must be avoided at any cost. You know, Swami would often say that it's not enough if you are good. You should also appear good. Because the society, and Swami would say that because the society possibly cannot directly see your intention. But it can see your action, it can see what you're doing. Therefore, Swami would say that apart from being good, you should also appear good. And this is the category of people who care a damn about being good, but they are always concerned about appearing good. That's why pretension comes and hypocrisy comes. This is one of the interpretations of the road to hell is paved with good intentions, must be avoided at any cost. In fact, you know, Prem, when I say this, I remember my own personal experience, and it was a revelation for me, and I can say with honesty in my heart that it was actually a bad intention masking itself like a good intention. But this much I am sure that I didn't know at that time. It was not intentionally cultivating the bad intention, that's all. So, it happened like in Vrindavan, you know, Swami would call us every evening for three sessions. And in Vrindavan what happens is, all the students, before going for darshan, we pick up lots for the lines to go. And depending on the token number you get a position to sit. So we would always covet token number one. And Lady Luck seemed to be with me in that period, because for almost 2 to 3 days in a row, I got to sit in the first line, which means right in the front in Trai Vrindavan, near the Jhula, which means for 3 days in a row, I got the opportunity to touch Swami's feet and, you know, I got the taste of nearness with Bhagwan.
Mm-hmm.
So then it so happened that the next day, when we picked up the token, I got some token which was in the end, because of which I was sitting somewhere far away. And I was sure that I will not be getting a good place to sit in Trai Vrindavan. And you know, with Bhagwan, it is always like that. When I was not a student, I used to feel that if I become a student, it's enough. Because I'm going to get daily darshan. What more do you want in life? But the moment you become a student, you're not happy with daily darshan. You want daily close darshan. And the moment you start getting daily close darshan, you want daily close darshan along with Swami's interaction. There's no end to that. And you know, once you reach a higher level of desire, a daily darshan will almost seem like normal. It doesn't make any sense at all. A darshan, what's so big in it? It comes off like that. That is the foolishness of the human mind. So because of these 3 days of physical nearness where I could sit so close to Swami for an hour nearly and, you know, get the opportunity to touch his feet and all that, suddenly it felt not so interesting anymore, you know, the Trai session, because I knew for sure that I would be sitting far away or possibly in the adjacent room, not even in the Jhula room. Because I was so behind. That is when, you know, in my mind the thought came that, Swami, every day you are so busy. Morning you give darshan, then interviews, then evening darshan, then bhajans, then again after the Trai session. Swami, you must be getting tired. Why don't you take a break? You know, leave it. No need of thrice session today. At that point in time, I didn't know that, okay, why should I reveal that now? I just felt that it was a very noble thought. All of us think about our chances and how we can get closer to Swami. I felt nobody thinks from Swami's perspective at all. Swami must be so tired. How nice for him to chill out and take it easy one evening. So I was praying like this. And I was thinking that I am so selfless in my prayer. And possibly I am the noblest among all the students here. Because I am telling Swami, no need. After this, you just take a break. And usually what would happen is after thrice session, we would go and play cricket. I was thinking, fine, Swami, you take rest. We will go and play cricket. That day, to my utter amazement, you know, that door on the right which would open and a teacher would come and signal us because thrice session is there. He came and signaled that there is no thrice session. And I felt this is what happens when your prayer is selfless. When your prayer is selfless, God responds instantly the way he has done now. Because I prayed and God responded and I was thrilled. And so all the students got up and those who had got the front lines, you know, there were groans and they were absolutely disappointed. So they were dusting their mats and walking back to their hostel with their heads down. Now I had to wind up all the mics because I was part of the AVC group, the audio visual team. So I had to roll the wires and keep all the mics inside the AVC room, which was in the Tri Brindavan compound, as you know. Now as we were doing that, suddenly one teacher comes running out of Tri Brindavan and I am the only student standing there because the others are rolling up the mics inside the room and I am standing outside the room winding up the wires. He looks at me and asks, where are the students? I said, sir, they've all gone to the hostel. He said, oh, but what about thrice session? Looks like there is thrice session. At that moment, Prem, suddenly all my selflessness was gone. And my heart was thumping hard and thinking, oh my God, if there is thrice session, I can get to sit right at the jhula now because I am the first and I have a good 150 meter lead over everybody else who are in the hostel. So my heart began to say, oh, I wish there is thrice session. I wish there is thrice session. A feeble voice came there, you know, hey, what about Swami taking rest? Hey, I don't know all that. I hope there is thrice session. And sure enough, within 2 seconds, again, the teacher came out and said, send word to the hostel that Swami wants to give thrice session. So the intercom phone, I just called and said, there is thrice session, slammed the phone, rushed in and sat right in the front. You know, that day when Swami came for thrice session, I was right in the front, but I was feeling so horrible within because I realized that I am not selfless at all. I am absolutely so selfish and I am actually being mean and cheap. I didn't want a thrice session just because I thought I'll be sitting behind. The moment it became that I can sit in the front, the whole thing changed and this is nothing but absolute selfishness. This is what happens, you know, as I said, this was unconscious, but it made me alert to this facet of selfishness that it can camouflage itself as selflessness. So it definitely has made me more alert and I don't know if I'm 100% successful, but I keep a watch out for this, whether my so-called pure actions and selfless actions are actually a camouflage of selfishness itself. So this is what it is, that this is what is the first meaning of the road to hell being paved with good intentions, that we often use good intentions to camouflage the baser and more meaner things that we wish to do.
Right, and you know, it's typically the most dangerous thing about saying that good intention alone is important. I know this sounds a little contrary to what we started off by saying, that good intention alone is in our control and that's what we have to think about. It's dangerous because, you know, when you're... One thing is, like you're saying, your mind itself can delude you into thinking that, no, this is good, so it's all right. Somebody else can also delude you or, you know, get you to do something wrong based on some good intention that you're having, suggesting that, you know, this is the right thing, you know, you do this and somebody will benefit and things like that. And that is why, you know, good intention, especially when youngsters, one thing which I have seen, you know, a personal observation of myself and the people around, on one hand is good intention, on the other hand is actually a more comprehensive common sense, if I could put it that way. Sometimes we don't see all the possibilities of the consequence of what we do. And sometimes that becomes dangerous. And that's why I think we'd spoken about this sometime back also, this concept of consequentialism. In philosophy, they speak about that.
Mm-hmm.
consequentialism is, what is the immediate consequence of what I am doing? If it is good, my act is good. Right? It's that is what justifies somebody like Robin Hood or any of those characters which we tend to romanticize about, saying that, you know, oh, it's okay, he's after all benefiting the good and the poor and the people who are needy. It's okay if he steals from the rich and those who are cheating, you know, that kind of a thing. That immediate consequence of your act is good. If you're able to save somebody, if you're able to, you know, feed somebody, then it is good. The counter for that is, sometimes the immediate consequence may be good, but the long-term consequence of such an action may not be as good. And oftentimes when you're young and when you're, you know, filled with that rush of enthusiasm, you might fail to see the larger picture or the larger consequence of our action. And that's the dangerous thing of only thinking that good intentions are good. And that's one more interpretation of good intention. Yeah, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Because invariably those who have or only bothered about their intention is, I know I'm doing the right thing, the others can go to hell. I think it's not a direct interpretation of the statement, but that's what happens. You think that I'm doing it right, I don't care about if others are being hurt or if others are being unhappy with it. And this is something which, at the face of it, you can make out that that's not something Swami would want. That for us to be very abrasive and, you know, individualistic about our approach.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, when you say that, even when you have good intentions, though it is the most important for Swami, for God, it, the way, you know, you cannot do away for to your common sense, you cannot bid goodbye to your common sense and brain. Because when we say about people who you know, we spoke about the previous case of concentration camps, racial abuse, moral policing, terrorism, people who brainwash people into doing these things. Those people who are brainwashing the people are guilty of the first thing, wherein they are intentionally camouflaging the evil as good. But those that are getting brainwashed, possibly, they fall into the second category. Your intention is good. You want to serve your country. You're patriotic. You want to serve your religion. You love God. You want to do something for God. So you're having that good intention. But your good intention, you're getting fooled because possibly you lack common sense. Possibly you lack the brains to think through. Possibly you lack the experience. Because of which, you end up doing some things which has unintended consequences. I don't know if many people who, you know, indulged in concentration camps or whatever, even in war, they knew what's going to happen. It may not even be as bad as that. For instance, you have the case of many American soldiers who have gone to Iraq and Afghanistan, now reporting with PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, you went with all good intention. You went with the intention that you want to be loyal to your country, patriotic, you want to bring world peace, you did all that. Possibly you brought world peace also, I don't know. But you suffered you're suffering now from PTSD, and it's a serious problem, and there is no one way of curing it or another. You have to live with it for life. What do you explain for that? You know, this is what it means by, though you have good intentions, it will have unintended bad consequences. And that is why, you know, you need to have what Swami would say as knack yoga, or you need to have tact while being able to deal with it. I'm reminded of a Chinnakatha, a very popular Chinnakatha, where Swami narrates how a renunciant, a mendicant, is sitting and meditating when he suddenly spots a deer that runs across. A few moments later, a hunter comes and asks him, "Sir, did you see a deer? I am hunting a deer, I don't know where it went." Now, this person has taken the vow of ahimsa, non-violence, and satya, which is to speak the truth. He doesn't know what to give an answer without actually breaking either of his vows. If he points out to the correct direction of the deer, he's going to violate his vow of ahimsa. If he points out to the wrong direction, he might actually adhere to ahimsa, but he is violating his vow of satya, truth. And Swami says, this person keeps calm for a while, thinks about it, and then tells him, "Dear hunter, the eyes that saw the deer cannot speak, and the mouth which can speak has not seen the deer." So it was a very beautiful, polite, yet firm manner in which he said that, "I am not going to help in any way, but nor am I going to speak the untruth." And that way he saved himself from speaking the untruth, at the same time from committing himsa or violence. So this is something that we need to develop to counter this problem, wherein we have good intentions, but it may end up with unintended bad consequences. It's unintended, therefore you need to think about it, you need to be careful, you need to use tact, you need to use knack, you need to do a lot of careful research and planning before going ahead.
And that's why often I think, you know, when Swami's saying, which Swami, it's very popular and very profound, Swami would say you need purity and unity and then divinity would manifest. If purity is all that is important, if intention is all that is important, Swami would say purity and there will be divinity. But the very fact that Swami says purity with unity is what will make divinity manifest is, yes, you have good intentions, but you have to ensure that you take everybody along, which means that intention of not wanting to offend anybody else, hurt anybody else, or harm anybody else also should be part of this good intention of the original act. That is very, very important, because especially, you know, in the ashram we see that, or in the Sai centers you would see that.
Everybody's intention is good.
Everybody will come with good intention, but they will be in a different direction, right? For instance, I've seen this with groups of maybe old students or even people in, you know, some people coming together to do something. They would have got direct instructions from Swami as to how a certain thing has to be done, right? So from their point of view, they're saying that, no, this is what Swami wants. And somebody else might be coming with a very similar experience where Swami has told them in an interview or something that this is how it has to be done. No, actually, both of them are coming with good intentions, but from their point of view. So at such a time, it's very important to ensure that, you know, you persist with your good intention, but trying as much as possible to integrate harmonize everybody else and harmonize everybody into that thing. And I think it becomes very, very important, especially young people, youth, who generally tend to be, you know, I'm doing the right thing, so I don't have to, I mean, saying this with responsibility, because hopefully we'll also be considered young. Not that people will say, oh, all these old people are talking about youngsters like this. Because we can sense that in us, that when we feel that something is right, we feel that it is right, everybody should fall in line.
And we go all out to achieve it.
Right, and that is not the right approach, especially when it comes to anything that you want to offer to Swami in that sense.
See, I remember one incident, very interesting. If narrated from one perspective, it looks like the other person is wrong. But if we see an overall perspective neutrally, it's a very interesting case study. In year 2008, our director at Radio Sai, that is Professor G. Venkatraman, he had a very noble idea. He said that Swami has started the SSS VIP, Sri Sat Sai Village Integrated Program, and there's going to be a major event happening in the East and West Godavari. After that, Swami had also announced the, you know, Orissa Housing
Project.
Right. I think it was 2009. Yeah, so houses were being built and he said that we should document this. Very noble ideas. So he wanted Bishu and myself to travel to this East and West Godavari as well as Orissa. Good intention, everything fine. But that is when I felt, you know, Swami was actually giving me attention at a physical level, in the sense that he would see where I'm sitting, whether I'm in the front or not, and he had once even sent word that if there's any program in the mandir, I should be there with my camera. I should not miss covering it. Through Chakravarti sir, he had sent this message also. So I just was feeling that I went and told GV sir that, sir, I want to tell Swami that I'm going. Now, GV sir felt that if you tell Swami and Swami says not needed, because every time we have seen Swami do that. Swami, when he does a project, covering the project, putting it, documenting it is not important for him at all. He doesn't seem to have, you know, forgive me Swami for saying that, but Swami doesn't seem to have a sense of history or anything like that. So he simply gets his house broken down and, you know, in Vrindavan also the tree just chopped brutally. The tree which housed so many memories. I mean, he teaches detachment in brutal manner possible. So in that sense, you know, it was correct. He said that what if Swami says, no need to do all this. What they're doing, seva is important, no need to do photography and videography of the seva.
And I think he also had that idea that, I think Swami had told him, if you have a good intention to do a good work, you don't have to take Swami's permission at every
exactly, time, right? Exactly, because that is how even our video studio started functioning. Just one fine day we did bhajans and it started functioning. There was no informing Swami or Swami coming to inaugurate or anything. In fact, the way the studio got inaugurated was the first CD that was mastered in the studio, Swami actually physically heard it. I mean, and G.V. sir used to tell that what better inauguration you want. So in that sense, he was right. But I had a feeling that no, Swami has told me like this. I can't go without telling him. And that's what exactly I did. That evening, I actually told him. And, you know, to make matters worse, Swami gave me the vibhuti packet and blessings. But Swami said, why? What is the need to go? There's no need. They're all coming. You need not go. I don't know who is that they who are coming. And but one thing became clear. Swami said, why you need to go? The next day, I was supposed to leave in the evening. Both me and Bishu were to leave in the evening. In the morning, I just thought of trying once more. When I asked Swami, Swami, can we take blessings before going? Swami seemed upset. And Swami said, do whatever you want, you do. You know, Swami said like that and went off. And that is not something you want to listen from Swami, you know. We want to do what Swami wants us to do. We don't want Swami to tell us, you do what you want to do. So I had no other option but to come and tell GV sir that, sir, I don't think Swami is happy with me going. I don't want to go. And that infuriated GV sir. Because Venkatraman sir asked me, why did Swami come and tell you that? And I told him that, Swami, sir, I told Swami. He said, this is precisely what I told you not to do. Swami has himself told that you, for good things you need not take permission. Just go ahead and do it. Do the good thing. Now, this was a problem, and you know, me having a little, possibly a little loose tongue, I even told sir that, sir, I would rather hear anger and upset from you than from Swami, sir. That's why I did this. And he got even more upset. He said, get out. Don't show me your face. And I was thinking, what a situation this is. GV sir was very disappointed because his plans had been laid to waste. And, you know, in those days, tickets were not transferable. Our tickets had been booked and everything, itinerary had been planned, and 4 hours before the train, you can't get a replacement. And you know, even if a replacement is there, he can't travel on my ticket. Because now the government allows transfer, now the railways allow the transference of tickets. Those days it was not allowed. So what do we do? You know, that was his problem. And my problem was, now what do I do? I mean, Swami is upset with me. Venkatraman sir is upset with me. But then some sequence of events happened because of which we actually managed, both Bishu and myself managed to get an audience with Swami himself at his residence. And there Swami, you know, tells that, oh, I didn't know all these details. It's all very good. Go ahead. Swami gave us blessings, gave us sweets, gave us some money and blessed us and said, go and come. And just half an hour before the train could leave, we managed to rush, take GV sir's blessings. You know, we said, sir, bless us. We are all going. And GV sir was happy. I was happy. Everybody was happy. And finally we went and yeah, we did a coverage and yeah, the story ended very well. It was beautiful. But in those few moments, you know, I realized that it's not like GV sir is wrong. It's not like I am wrong. Both of us have the same pure intentions. But because we are not at harmony with each other, it is causing a huge problem where he is upset, I am upset, Swami is upset. And Swami showed that along with purity, yeah, Venkatraman sir is pure. Arvind, you are pure. But you are not having that unity because of which there is disharmony. The moment that harmony is brought in, divinity gets manifested. And in this case, actually, Swami says, when there's purity and unity, that leads to divinity. In this case, it was slightly different. There was purity and divinity came in and brought unity. But I think that was just as a sample to show that this is how it should be. And it felt like an assurance from Swami that along with purity, when you get in unity, divinity will definitely manifest. And that is why divinity manifested, just to show you that with your purity, you can achieve unity and divinity. So this incident came to mind, and that's why I feel that even though when we have good intentions, the how part also becomes important. The why is the intention part, but as long as we are staying in society, we need to interact with others. We need to interact with others' expressions of their own purity. You know, if it's a purity versus impurity, it's easy to decide. But if it's a purity versus purity, that's where how you do it becomes important. And these kind of clashes arise more and more when we live in a family, in a society. Therefore, depending on our interaction and how much we mingle with each other, that much of tact, that much of knack, that much of understanding, that much of patience is required. That much we have to go slower. Even at the cost of speed, we need to achieve this, because it's only purity plus unity that gets divinity.
And sometimes it works the other way around also. You know, the fondness of Swami for unity is so much. Sometimes if you lack in the purity, Swami will come and ensure that the purity is brought in as long as there is unity. You know, sometimes an example which I can think of that we might have quoted it before, which I think a couple of years back, Sanjay Sani sir, who is the controller of examinations, he spoke during the sports meet. you know, because this is also a time where not only about the intention of that feeling of offering something to Swami, but that united effort.
Offering, yes.
You know, everybody coming together and making that offering is something which Swami would like so much. In fact, that's when we were speaking to one of the old students who trains the students in March Past. He was saying purely that must be the only thing which fascinates Swami about the March Past. The fact that people from, you know, different places come together, mm-hmm. different heights and different talents, are able to do something together with harmony, right? That was so important for Swami. So this was about one of the moral class presentations which were done by undergraduate students in Prashanthi Nilayam. You know, during the moral class, you usually have a speaker, or sometimes there would be a presentation by one of the schools, I mean, one of the classes. So that was a time when this stock market scam was going on, where I think this Harshad Mehta had, you know, done something.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So in India, yes.
Right, in India, it was a huge scandal in the stock market and all that. I mean, even as students, we've heard all of these names, we've heard that there was a scam and there was a scandal, but we didn't know what exactly it was.
Mm.
So the undergraduate students had come together and they had made a huge presentation explaining what was wrong with what happened and, you know, how it was detected and all of that. And the entire campus was so fascinated by how simply they had explained it. And it was so very nice, very, very well presented. And coming from an undergraduate class, they were all really impressed, even the professors of the management classes. And invariably, whenever there's a moral class, in the evening, Swami would come and ask, what did you have today?
Hmm.
Because that used to be Swami's, you know, pet period in the entire schedule. And most often when Swami's in Vrindavan, Swami used to send speakers for the moral class. You know, some of the devotees, Swami would have told that, you know, tomorrow you speak in the moral class. So Swami would come and ask, what did you do in the moral class? And when Swami asked that, some of these professors got up and they started praising the presentation which was made. And he said, Swami, it was so good. Young boys, they've such research. This is like pre-internet era. So they should have really sat down in the library and gone through, you know, paper and all of that and understood the whole thing. Swami was so happy hearing this from senior professors. And Swami asked, where are those boys who did the presentation? So those boys came in front and Swami gave them all Pad Namaskar. And at the end of it, Swami said this, you know, Swami said, see, I'm not very happy of the topic that you chose.
Mm.
He said, see, why do you have to keep thinking about scandals and, you know, these kind of cheating people and cheating people of money and all of that? I don't want my students to even give their mind to such things. Don't even think of them. Don't even contemplate. If it is there in the news, let it be there. I don't want you to think of it. So I'm a little unhappy that you chose this topic. And then Swami said, but I'm giving you this Pad Namaskar because you worked with unity.
Mm.
Swami said, I'm pleased by that. So clearly Swami is saying that, you know, your unity has touched me, but it's lacking in purity, but I'm just telling you so that you can work on that. And that's how important it is that you should not stop with good intentions, but you should also go forward and ensure that everybody comes along in manifesting that good intention in whatever way it has to be.
Of course, there's another final way this statement can be interpreted, which is the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But that final interpretation, I think, dear listeners, we'll have to wait for a couple more minutes because we'll take a quick little break and on the other side of the break, continue this discussion and conclude it.
बंधन तुमसे हमारा प्यार का बंधन तुमसे हमारा साए तुम ही हो हमारे दिलों की धड़कन साए तुम ही हो जिनसे खिलाए जीवन प्यार का बंधन तुमसे हम
पश्यतो मा मनसुना प्रेम निम्पाहु बिरुदुलत्तु पदवुलत्तु मी प्रेम माकु चालुने सेदतीच्छे स्वामी वुडिये माकु एंतो हाईले
Welcome back, dear listeners. As we discussed after the previous break, that even with good intentions, we may have unintended bad consequences, and therefore we need to work together with everyone, and we need to harmonize along with purity of thought and intention. We need unity also. That is what makes Swami happy. And for this, we need to be careful, make use of tact, and you know, come out of the box solutions if necessary too. You know, speaking of out of the box, I just remember there was this case study we had in MBA wherein they found a problem in a soap making industry where the soaps would be missing in some of the soap boxes, and it was very costly to examine each box. But at the same time, if you don't examine each box, even one box going empty without the soap would mean
bad name
and a hit on the quality consciousness. So it was a debate. Well, whereas one department says that check every box individually, the finance department says no, you can't afford it, no problem, let one or two go bad, you know, we'll just replace that. When this was going on, somebody came up with the idea of, you know, using a blower fan so that when the fan is blowing hard, any box that doesn't have a soap within will fly off, and it was an out of the box solution. So at our own samiti level, at the organization level, at the center level, at Prashanthi Nilayam level, we are bound to have these kind of conflicts, purity conflicts, if I can call them so. Because if it's a case of purity versus impurity, I think Swami will give a lot of strength to the purity part to overpower the impurity. But when there is a clash of two good intentions, I think this is where we have to harmonize and come out with some out-of-the-box solution so that everyone is happy and united. The other meaning of this phrase of road to hell is paved with good intention is that, considering the primacy of intention, people may actually become lazy and give up doing anything. Now that is also not appreciated, because Swami says realization is rest and best, but laziness is rust and dust. So it is not enough just to have a good intention. We need to act on it as fast as possible.
And absolutely, because many times, the moment you go beyond intentions, as we said, intentions is something which is so inconceivable And that's why Swami comes into the picture, because only Swami will be able to see our intentions. And that is what we started with. Swami is interested only in our intention, because he knows that that's alone in our control, and you know, you will be judged by that and you'll be rewarded by that. But the moment you go beyond intentions or go beyond to the physical realm where there are other people involved, you will have to go beyond something which is only between you and Swami, or only to yourself. And invariably, you are judged by what you speak, how you act, and what you do. And that is why good intentions are not enough in certain situations. You know, some situations, your silence may be backed by good intention. That's a different thing altogether. But what we're talking about is you're filled with good intention, but you don't do anything. Right? And that is a danger, because sometimes that moment is so precious that you need to act at that moment. With all your good intentions, if you lose that moment, that inaction also is considered as not acceptable or a wrong act in that sense.
In fact, it reminds us of how Swami would speak of the different kinds of sinners. You know, when Draupadi was disrobed in the Hastinapur court, actually if you see people like Drona and Bhishma, Drona is the guru for the Kauravas and Pandavas, Bhishma is the great grandsire, Bhishma Pitamaha they call him, such a noble being. They had absolutely no wrong intentions. And they were filled with pure intentions. And yet Krishna says that they'll have to suffer the negative consequences of their negative karma. Why? Because they didn't give vent to those good intentions. They didn't act upon those good intentions. And when it came to this woman being disrobed in the court, they didn't do anything to stop it. That's why Swami says, not just the person who perpetrates the crime, one who supports the perpetration of that crime, one who, you know, is watching it. He's witnessing it but doing nothing about it. So in this manner, there are multiple sinners in a crime, though people are not directly involved in it. And that is what happens if people have only good intentions and don't act on it. You know, that's why they say the world is not bad because of bad people. The world goes bad because the good are not good enough. And in my opinion, the statement the good are not good enough means that the good remain good only at the intention level. They don't come out with action. And that is the reason why we don't see transformation.
And in fact, this is something which Swami would say, I think in a couple of discourses, when he's addressing parents, right? At some points, you have to take a firm stand. You know, you can't say that I don't want to hurt the child, or to take recourse to silence or inaction. At some times, the good intention has to manifest in a firm act if it needs to be in that case. And that is why, you know, many times we choose inaction because we are not too sure and we don't want to take the trouble of making sure that what is right or wrong. And that's why the classic statement that you cannot be a bystander when there is a conflict of moralities, a conflict of right and wrong. You
have to take a stance.
When there's a dharmic conflict, you have to take a stance, because not taking a stance also becomes you siding with adharma. And that, you know, that's very important in that sense.
You know, many times when people, when I speak or when people speak, we often use Swami's hierarchy, which is be, do, see, tell. We say that speaking of goodness alone is not enough, because to speak good, you must see what is the appropriate situation and speak. But even seeing an appropriate situation, speaking is not enough, because whatever you're speaking must be backed by your actions. You must do good, then see the appropriate situation and then speak the good. But then it doesn't stop with that, because the first level is be. In order, it's not just enough to do good, you need to be good. And that is where Swami is taking care of the first problem we spoke of hypocrisy, where I'm camouflaging. I may be doing good actions, but my intention is very bad. That's why Swami says it has to start with being, then it goes to doing, then it goes to seeing, then it goes to telling. So we often use this be, do, see, tell hierarchy to, you know, to emphasize the importance of being good in the core. But what is interesting is Swami never stopped at just being good. If intention and purity of intention alone was enough, Swami would just stop at you just be good, that's all. He would never have told do good or see good or speak good. Why? Because if you are good, it should be enough. No. He has said the other things because in the order, in the hierarchy, it is most important that you be good first. But being good alone is not enough. After being good, you need to do good. And after doing good, you need to see the appropriate situation and even speak about the good. You need to even publicize the good. Swami gives this hierarchy just to emphasize that you cannot simply start speaking good without being good yourself or without doing good yourself. But at the same time, it's not enough if you just be good, you need to do good. It's not enough if you just do good, you need to even speak about the good. So therefore, I think that is a nice conclusion. And in situations where the intention is definitely good and we are not able to actually, you know, harmonize or come together, or we are finding it difficult, as you said, now, because Swami's physical presence is not seen as we could a few years ago, I think that's where we have to make use of Swami's guidelines or direction, that we listen to our conscience.
And it all goes back to, you know, what we started off with, like the example that you gave. The moment you say your intention should be good, I see it this way. Whatever we do is multidimensional. You know, if I want to do a charity, if I want to start a new project in Radio Sai, let's say, or if you want to start a new project in your center or samiti, it involves a lot of dimensions, but we always concentrate on purifying intention only in one direction or one dimension. We just say that, no, Swami has told do seva, so seva of any form is right. Right? It's a very one-dimensional approach even when you're talking about purifying your intention. And that is where we tend to, you know, mask our inability to see the whole picture. Swami would often say that you should have, forgetting the term which Swami would use, all-round...
Vishala Drishti.
Vishala Drishti, and, you know, you have to have a comprehensive vision of whatever you're seeing.
Mm.
And invariably, our inability to have that comprehensive vision is masked by this one-dimensional good intention. It is good in this sense, somebody is benefiting, or I've heard Swami saying that this is the right thing to do. But we forget that, you know, as we were telling, even unity is something which Swami wants. So that struggle to get that comprehensive goodness is itself, we are supposed to move towards that intention. That should be our approach. And the best way to do that is, you know, most often we are all good people. We don't, I think, give enough attention to look into ourselves and see whether we are doing that. And for that, invariably, you have to turn to what Swami would often say, are you following the master? That conscience within is the best benchmark or the best referral point for which you can turn back to and say that, am my intentions really good, or is it partially good and I'm trying to, you know, push it off as the best intention I'm capable of?
So, dear listeners, just to sum up all we said so far, I mean, in the whole discussion, we began by saying God is Bhava Priya and not Bahya Priya, and therefore, if one's intentions are pure and good, Swami is very happy. But then, are good intentions alone enough? If we are actually masking our cruel and wicked and evil intentions as good and fooling people around, that doesn't even qualify as good intention as far as this discussion is concerned. That is something that is 100% to be avoided. But then, of course, there might be the case of good intentions leading to unintended results which are not so good because possibly it has not been thought through or because of lack of experience or various reasons. So in such cases, along with good intentions, we need to harmonize, we need to work unitedly, we need to ensure that all loopholes are taken care of, and as Swami says, knack yoga, bring in tact, use all these things to ensure
Right. I'm sorry. The other point I just wanted to add to what you're saying is, at times when you have good intentions and you don't have the right results following, to have faith in good intentions is also very, very important. Because we say that, Swami, I put good intention and see what has happened. And, you know, you let me down. Not only saying that Swami sees only good intention, but having complete faith in that good intention will reach Swami.
And that is so fantastic, Prem. Good that you interrupted, because that is what the story of Harishchandra teaches us. Because when Raja Harishchandra followed the truth, he met with disaster after disaster. And yet he held on to the truth, and ultimately it took God just one second, one fraction of a second to uplift him from the deepest of nadirs to the zenith, you know. It takes only one fraction of a second for God to do that. So therefore, what you say is very important, that when we do something with the purity of intent, we need to have faith in it and hold on, in spite of the apparent debacles that seem to be coming our way. And finally, we spoke about how good intention alone is not enough, in the sense that if it is not backed up by our actions and our words, it's not good. It almost amounts to laziness, and therefore we need to act on the good intentions as well. And for all this, our companion, our best friend, our guide and philosopher is Bhagwan as our conscience. We said that in times when Swami was there with us physically, we could get feedback from him. But that is also not absolutely true, because in some instances, a few people could get feedback. I mean, if you look at my life or Prem's life, there are hundreds of decisions for which I would have loved Swami's feedback but got no feedback physically. So even when Swami was physically present, his guidance was anecdotal for us. The actual guidance came from within as the conscience, and that conscience is vibrant and alive for all of us for as long as we live, and that is where we must seek solace, and that is the master that we must follow. On that note, dear listeners, we offer this segment at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan. Would like to remind all of you to tune into our broadcast tomorrow, because Radio Sai will bring you some of the amazing things that all the students are doing with the purest of intentions, which is to bring a sweet smile on the beautiful face of Bhagwan as he watches the annual sports and cultural meet. It's an extravaganza, and it's not just ending tomorrow, because the next 4-5 days there will be a lot of events, especially cultural events after the 11th. Dramas in Kulwant Hall by the school, by the Prashantilayam campus, Brindavan campus, Anandpur campus. Don't miss this bonanza that is coming your way in the next week. All the best. Let's enjoy this. Let's bask in Swami's love, and let's do everything in our life to bring a smile on his face. Thank you, dear listeners. Jai Sairam.